Hey everybody, welcome to J&J on Jazz, powered by Jazzwire.
This is my friend Jeff, and when he graduated high school, he was definitely going to be a physicist.
True story. And I'm told that when James graduated high school, he barely passed pre-calculus.
So true.
There you go.
Truth.
It takes all kinds. So today, the thought was, James and I kind of challenged each other to come up with, like, what was a game changer for us? And we didn't really define it any further than that. I'm not quite sure what he's going to talk about. But to me, when I think about what a game changer was for me, something that got me playing better or gave me that sound that I was missing, or however you want to talk about it, to me, enclosures. That was it. Mm-hmm. I remember the first time somebody showed me enclosures. It was actually one of my teachers up in Canada, and an enclosure. So here is a B-flat triad, plain old B-flat triad. And here's a way we could enclose each of those notes. So adding this kind of wiggly, chromatic, intricate, filigreed, baroque, bebop, you know, million words we can use to describe it. That was the sound that I was hearing my heroes play, and I couldn't figure out what it was. Or I'd play Charlie Parker transcriptions, but I didn't know how to make sense of what I was seeing. There'd be a C major chord, and you'd play a C sharp, and it would sound great. That's what's up with that. When I played a C sharp, it sucked. Screw you, Charlie Parker, right? That's what I'm thinking. Like, dude, why do you get to play C sharp and I don't? Because, man, it sounded bad when I did. Well, it's the context, right? So here's the way I think about enclosures now. It's, well, I've got a machine upstairs, and I push the button, and out comes espresso. I don't know what's going on. It just does that. Things happen inside, and out comes espresso.
Six of them a day, right? Six of them a day? We talked about that last week.
We did.
Yeah, calm down.
We did. Let me chill. So to me, enclosures are a machine like that that spits out bebop. Press the button and bebop starts flying out when you know enclosures. So to me, when I play that enclosure, above, below, target note, above, below, target note. Let me do that again. So that sound, above, below, target note. We could also call that tension, tension, release. Tension, tension, release. So in the old days, as a young player, when I wanted to play a C, you know what I'd do? I'd play C and go, ah, okay, there's my C. That's what I meant, and now I did it. When Charlie Parker wanted to play a C, he might play D, B, C, or D, C sharp, B, C. He put all this stuff around the C. He would play these tensions that were pointing at the C. That's pretty slick. So it's a way to get all these tensions. So what I just did there was play tension, tension, release, tension, tension, release. So for every note that I had in mind, I got three notes, above, below, and then the note I was thinking about. So first of all, I tripled my money by getting more notes. And two of the three notes were tensions. And for a lot of novice jazz players, that's one of the things we're trying to get is how do we get, you know, it's one thing to get some correct notes and some chord tones, mm-hmm. but it doesn't sound like music yet. Music requires, any art requires tension and release. So I loved enclosures because it gave me more notes. I'd have one thought, C, and then I'd get D, B, C. So I'd have one thought and I'd get three notes. Or I'd have one thought, I'm going to enclose a C triad, and I'd get 18 notes. And two-thirds of them were tensions that had proper resolutions. This was huge for me. I can't overstate. So when I think back to 40 years of playing this music, this is definitely a game changer for me. And enclosures is an endlessly, it just doesn't end all the possible ways we can use enclosures. And every one of your favorite musicians whether that's Michael Jackson or Bob Dylan or Clifford Brown or Charlie Parker or whoever, enclosures are a part of what make great melodies that human beings love to hear. So it's not a jazz innovation. So that's it, man. Enclosures. Did you have a similar experience where enclosures kind of a big thing for you, or not so much? Or did you sort of intuitively get them?
I think I intuitively got them early, and you and I have talked a little bit about how sometimes our brains were wired differently in our formative years. I almost poked at you when you said, you know, I want this, like, put this in and it spits out bebop. Because when I was younger, if somebody had showed me the concept, I think it would have slowed me down because I understood it. I understood it intuitively. But later I came to start approaching it like you're talking about too, like plugging it into exercises and really trying to be a little bit more methodical about it. Interestingly enough, and I talk a lot about Clifford Brown because he was one of my early influences, his teacher in Wilmington, Delaware, a guy named Boise Lowry, used to teach young students how to play bebop, regardless of what instrument they played, by using this idea of enclosure figures, and he called them active tones. And if you played two enclosure figures before you hit a goal note, he called that a double active tone. So where Jeff played this... which those would all be thought of by Boise as active tones. But if I were to play this... if I were to approach that first, that concert B flat by using two enclosure figures consecutively, he called that double active. So I came to this a little bit later from a theoretical standpoint, like when I was in college, but for sure. Yeah. Big time.
First of all, I like double active because presumably you burn twice as many calories. So
absolutely,
I'm going to start doing those. Very good. But this is interesting, right? Something that was a huge game changer for me conceptually was not for you. It was something that you just sort of intuitively got.
It was a no-brainer, literally, because I wasn't thinking about it, right?
There you go. Man, love it.
So here's mine, and I'm making a little bit of a game time decision on this game changer because I've got a couple ways I can go with this, and I've been thinking about this for a couple days. So I've talked about diminished sounds and diminished scales a lot here in different episodes, and for a lot of years, teachers would tell me when you get to a diminished chord, play the whole half scale. That's the scale you use over the diminished sound, right? And so, and that scale, of course, is, here it is. So I thought, okay, when I'm playing on a major chord, I never play this kind of an idea. I never just play the scale on a major chord. I'm playing some sort of an idea that sounds like a melody. So these teachers would say, here's the whole half diminished scale, explore that sound. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to make melodies on this scale, and it just sounds like complete random nonsense. Because I wasn't conceiving of this scale as going someplace, right? Leading me from point A to point B. So I'd play nonsense ideas thinking I was exploring the sound. And this happened till I was like 25, for crying out loud. This is when I had my epiphany, right? I'd play random ideas that didn't sound like anything. But I'm listening to Sonny Stitt play a blues for the millionth time, and he gets to the sixth bar, where a lot of times cats will put a diminished passing chord. In a B flat blues, that's going to be E diminished 7. And here's what Sonny Stitt plays on the sixth bar of a blues on this diminished sound. He literally just played the scale. The trick is, he started not on E natural in the E whole half diminished scale. He started on the pickup note to that. He started on E flat. Essentially, he played an E flat whole half diminished scale, starting on the and of 4 in the bar before. 1, 2, 3, 4, b ya ba ya ba ya ba ya ba ya, like this. Uh. And all of a sudden it hit me. I'm not supposed to explore the sound. The scale is the sound. But there's a right way to play it. And that's play it like Sonny Stitt.
Man, I love it. And I mean, you know, you're really talking about going back. You know, the turning point was listening to one of the greats play some vocabulary, right? So, you know, I've done that too. I've, you know, tried to imagine my own approach or, you know, doing my own experiments, and that's great and we should do that. But at the end of the day, people smarter than us have figured this out and done it really well at some point in the past, right? And so what about if we just hitch our wagon to that? I mean, that's kind of part of the lesson that I'm getting from you. And from there, it just opened things up for you, right?
Yeah. And I think that's exactly right. I think because I was such an ear player earlier on, that was a chord diminished as a chord was one that it kind of scared me almost because it felt like something that
for sure.
It was like, I don't, you know, I understand that it's a symmetrical chord. I understand the theory behind it, but I didn't realize. And it's funny because I was playing diminished sounds as a bebop player. I was playing licks that were based on the diminished chord or the diminished sound, but I didn't realize it. So for me, it was another of those cases where somebody tried to halfway show me the theory behind it, and I got vapor locked. But I think for me, when I heard explore the sound, what I needed was someone to say, no, here's what you're hearing, and you're already hearing this, and here's what it is. So not only was it a game changer for me as a player, but I was starting to teach when I was 26, 27. I landed my first college gig, and so having only been a couple years out from that, it reminded me that not every player learns the same way. Not everybody's path to hearing these things is linear. And so I kind of had to teach myself some of these things backwards. Here's what I'm already playing. Here's what it is. So it just opened my ears and my brain to thinking about certain sounds and from two different angles, if that makes any sense.
Man, fantastic. And, you know, you and I just taught the last 2 weeks at Maryland Summer Jazz. Mm-hmm. And we worked with about 50 adult students from around the world. You and I were on faculty with a bunch of other folks. And, you know, I'm artistic director. And when I'm hiring teachers, you know, you're the kind of person I'm looking for that understands that, you know, yes, there are tried and true paths to getting, you know, to explaining an idea, but that's not always going to resonate with everybody, right? So to me, that's what a good teacher is knowing my strong suit, knowing how I teach, but knowing eight other ways to get there too, right?
Absolutely.
So that's a big deal. Man, that's fantastic. Well, great. I'm glad we did this. And, you know, it's always kind of surprising the things we agree on or the different angles we take and how we experience the music a little bit differently.
Agreed.
So, yep. So for those of you out there, if you haven't yet come into Jazzwire to look around, behind the paywall, Jazzwire is a subscription website, but come in for a week and look around and look at the amazing stuff we have going on. Hundreds and hundreds of adult students from about 25 different countries. So take the free trial, sign up. You'll be in 20 seconds, no credit card or any of that messing around. And I would love to see you there and get you really moving ahead on this kind of information. James, thanks a lot, man.
Jeff, I always do this at the end. Big plug. I'm a huge fan of Jazzwire, and Jeff's not paying me to say that. All he's doing is sending me random funky t-shirts, and that's the only payment I get is that I get a window into his incredibly impressive graphic t-shirt game. So hop onto Jazzwire so I can get some more graphic t-shirts, please, everybody. Thank you.
Well, I guess now I know I need to change my shirt for the next episode. Will do.
Bring it.
Take care, everybody.
See y'all.